Continuing in the Gospel of Luke, our lectionary passage for this day is from Luke chapter 12. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbitrator over you?" And Jesus said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then Jesus told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." God bless the reading and the hearing of this word. Amen. Greed, for the lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. You may be familiar with these words from Oliver Stone's 1987 film, Wall Street. That memorable line was delivered by a high-powered, extremely successful, yet ruthless broker, played by Michael Douglas. And let's just call this character part of the top 1%. Amazing how this scenario is still relevant and descriptive in the mindset of our present-day culture 32 years later. I want to show you something. It's called the Boomer Bible, as in baby boomer, not boomer sooner. Look how thick this is. It's more of telling it like it is kind of work. And it's very long, filled with fascinating things. And this was released in 1991, and it has as its version of Psalm 23 these lines. "Money is my thing. It's all I want. It makes the grass look greener. It stills the deep waters. It restores my self-esteem. It takes me wherever I want to go for my own name's sake. Money makes me look good, too. My jar is just overflowing with money. And surely now I've figured it all out. Money will follow me all the days of my life, and I'll be in the money forever." The motivation to want more and more and more is not something that just affects the richest among us. In fact, at one level or another, I'd predict that almost everyone, and especially in this country's consumeristic, capitalistic society, suffers from what is called pleonexia. It's an infectious disease of the mind that is very hard to cure. Pleonexia is the Greek word used in this morning's gospel reading from Luke 12:15, which translates into English as greed. And in response to a question asked by a man disputing with his brother over dividing the family inheritance, Jesus instead gives a stern warning to the crowd. Watch out! Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. This still very relevant message is perhaps Jesus' way of telling us that ultimately our lives are defined not by what we have, but by who we are. And it asks the question, is the primary focus of our lives directed to possessing more and more stuff for ourselves, or is it focused on God? But in reality, try getting that message across to a very young child who wants just the right toy. And yes, probably an iPad. Or a young person who is under enormous peer pressure to buy just the right name brand sneakers or clothes. Or to adults who feel pressure to drive just the right car and live in just the right house in just the right neighborhood. Or something I used to be particularly prone to, having the very latest and best electronic equipment. Or more recently, thinking I needed to collect every different style of Frank Oma pottery ever produced. Pleonexia. The warning to beware of all kinds of greed begs the question that each of us must constantly ask of ourselves, how much is enough? And the problem usually arises when we confuse the things that we truly need with the things we want in order to live what we think will be a fulfilling life. And the image of a fulfilling life, of course, is determined by the advertisements that we are constantly bombarded with each and every day. All this is made much worse when we go deeper and deeper into debt, trying to get those things we want, or keep up with the Joneses, or get the things we think we need. And though most of us probably don't have a lot of money left over at the end of each month, let's face it, we are all rich in comparison with the economic standards of most of the rest of the world's population. But let me pause here for a moment and stress that there is a big difference between having wealth and being greedy. So what is greed? Well, most simply, it is defined as the desire to acquire or possess more than we need. Greed seeks possessions, to get our hands on whatever we can, to acquire without reference to our own specific needs or the situation or needs of others. And greed also has a very strong connection to being envious and to the word covet, which is one of the warnings in the Ten Commandments about desiring what other people have. And the ancient Romans even had a proverb that says, money is like seawater. The more persons drink, the thirstier they become. New Testament commentator William Barclay described pleonexia in his commentary on Luke over 60 years ago as an accursed love of having, which will pursue its own interests with complete disregard for the rights of others and even for the considerations of common humanity. And the Apostle Paul goes as far as to label greed a form of idolatry, when we substitute our search for the divine with the search for wealth and possessions, and in doing so, ignore God in the process. And true wealth, writes another biblical commentator, is only accumulated when one has God in mind in the use of one's economic means. So that applies to every one of us, no matter how rich or how poor. And that is the point made in the parable that Jesus tells of a rich man who was called a fool for storing up treasures just for himself, while not being concerned about being, quote, rich toward God. With this parable, Jesus provides an object lesson of how not to be a disciple, a follower of the ways and teachings of Jesus. Again, it's very important to note, however, that this particular parable does not criticize the accumulation of wealth in and of itself. What is criticized is selfishness and not becoming rich in spiritual matters. And it also applies to spending our life living only for tomorrow, instead of living life abundantly and fully today, in the here and the now. This parable, therefore, is not an outright condemnation or judgment against those who have wealth. However, the gospel writer Luke, on the other hand, may have had a bit of his own agenda going on when he reported on this parable. Because from Luke's theological perspective, riches, as in having wealth and possessions and elite economic status, is not neutral. For Luke, riches are inherently negative. And this is why. Because in ancient Palestine, people became rich primarily by exploiting the poor. From Luke's perspective, therefore, there is a life-threatening nature to riches, for it was considered a zero-sum game. So a person became rich only when others became or stayed poor. And let's be honest, there is indeed an element of this fact that continues to this day. And I know we'll be hearing more about this with the ongoing presidential campaigns. Well, with all that in mind, let's take a closer look at the parable itself. We learn that the landowner's barns aren't big enough to contain all the grain of this year's bountiful bumper crop. And that, in and of itself, would have been considered a blessing from God. So as the wise business manager decides, he will upgrade his storage facilities so that all of his harvest may be maintained efficiently. And when all the work is done, he will be in a good position to relax and enjoy his good fortune. Nothing wrong with that, is there? Aren't we all taught to save for a rainy day, especially for retirement? And the landowner's responsibility in life, he believes, have indeed been met. And all the needs of his life will now be satisfied. Or so he thinks. The twist in this parable comes when God informs the landowner that he will die that very night. So after spending a lifetime trying to secure his financial future, he only has a few hours left to enjoy it, to eat, drink, and be merry. You know, surveys reveal that one of the greatest regrets of dying persons is that they worked too hard, that they didn't spend enough time simply enjoying life. And that's why our Old Testament reading for today from the book of Ecclesiastes calls all of these pursuits vanities of vanities. All is vanity. And it compares it to the impossible task of chasing after the wind. But again, remember, the landowner is not being criticized or condemned for accumulating wealth and securing his financial well-being. Rather, he becomes an example of foolish living by neglecting to also focus his attention on spiritual matters and following the ways of God. For without an eye toward godly things, the landowner's craving to keep all his good fortune only for himself and his own personal enjoyment is, in fact, an act of total disregard for the needs of others. And the landowner hasn't done anything illegal. He hasn't stolen from his neighbor. We're not told he's mistreated his workers. However, the parable declares that he is a fool for living completely in and for himself. Therefore, he is called greedy. He suffers from pleonexia, in that he is selfish and self-absorbed. Now, in connection with building bigger barns, Comedian George Carlin used to say that our houses are nothing but a place to keep our stuff. Our stuff with a cover over it. And who among us doesn't wish they had more storage space and bigger closets? How much is enough? Admittedly, today's message may not be one that you nor I wanted to hear. And it's certainly one of those that, when we look ourselves in the mirror, can be a bit painful. But perhaps we need to heed the warning to be on guard against all kinds of greed, to be reminded that wealth does not really and ultimately secure the future, and that living a truly fulfilling life is a gift of God, not a hard-earned acquisition. So I'll leave you with the following questions to ponder and reflect upon this week. What do all of your possessions, your stuff, really mean to you? Could you get by with less stuff? Do you get trapped from time to time in becoming preoccupied and tempted to accumulate more and more? How do you deal with the dilemma of an abundance in having wealth but without greed? And how does the reality of your own mortality play into how you invest your wealth as well as how you invest your time? How do you keep God and other people in mind in the use of your financial resources and stewardship? And how can you and I and us together as a congregation live more simply? Let us all be on guard then as we strive for a cure of our pleonexia, and focus on what it means to be rich toward God. Amen.